Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for January 9th. It's the first show of the year. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, brother. And, yeah, I can't say much more than that. You're busier than all heck, and I'm not. You know, it's a new year, and I'm sort of, like, starting out slow. Feels like a new year.
Yeah, it does feel like a good new year. I'm not ready to throw my pillow away yet, because I think I'm going to use it at some point. But actually...
Why does one throw away a pillow at the new year?
With twins, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
My pillow is now gathering dust.
Okay, that's something I would not have known otherwise, so thank you for that. I mean, we try to get as much information out there as possible, and so we're succeeding.
We're in the information business.
We are indeed.
All right. And on this week's show, we've got information about the new CBA and how it's going to impact MPB, and we're going to talk to CJ Nitkowski, the former SoftBank Hawks pitcher, about that. And we're going to discuss the WBC and the Hall of Fame, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I talked with CJ this past Thursday. If you're listening on January 9th when the show comes out, we spoke by phone. He's on, you know, I actually didn't ask him where he's living, but he's on East Coast time, so I'm figuring it's somewhere in New York. And yeah, he spent the 2007-2008 seasons with SoftBank, and I remember sitting next to him during a spring training game in 2007, okay. And I became a fan of his at that moment. He was just really fun. He was, I think I said this on the show before we had him on, just a guy full of life, and you know, he was excited about being in Japan, really eager to learn, try to learn as much as he could about the language, the baseball, his teammates, and everything, and it just really impressed me, and he didn't have that great a career on the field in Japan. He was okay. He was one of those guys who really worked hard, and they used him in different situations. And yeah, I really liked him. I thought he was a good guy. He was a good pitcher. He was he had a decent career here in Japan. Mm-hmm. But you know, he hasn't been in the game for a while, but he's heavily involved in the game. He has a great voice, which I'm very jealous of, and he obviously understands the game. And you know, he broke a little bit of news during our chat, but obviously since we are not uploading until January 9th, it's already out there. But let's take a listen to what he had to say. All right, joining us for the first time in a long time is CJ Nitkowski, who pitched in Japan with the SoftBank Hawks for a little while, and now he's an analyst with Fox Sports and doing a whole lot of other things. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, John. Good to talk to you. It's been a while, like you said, but certainly nice to be back on the podcast with you.
Happy New Year. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time early in the morning on your side. It's, you know, a little bit late over here, but we're all good. So I know you're doing a lot of stuff. I said Fox One Sports, but I know you're into a lot of stuff. What are you doing these days, especially in off season?
Yeah, ever since I started in this business back in 2013, I've learned all about the hustle, you know, which is doing everything you possibly can to try to carve out a career. And so the past couple of years, I've been working with FS1, doing a lot of work for them, studio shows, doing games. But yeah, I have a multitude of things that I do. I'm actually making a little bit of a change next year. So starting in 2017, I'll become the main analyst on the Texas Rangers broadcast on Fox Sports Southwest on the TV side. And so I'll do a bulk of their games as their analyst, but also we'll be doing some play-by-play as well, which is kind of a big challenge for me. I have very limited play-by-play experience, but enough, I guess, that the Rangers saw that they felt confident in handing over a couple of games to me going forward next year. So I have the Rangers thing, which is going to be the bulk of what I do. I'm very excited about that. Can't wait to get going there. It's a really good market. Obviously, Darvish is there, which will be really cool. I played against him when I was in Fukuoka,
and he
was up in Sapporo. So that'll be cool, a nice little kind of twist to that. But then I'm also – I do a lot of radio too. I really enjoy doing radio. I think it's a great way – you have a little bit more time to kind of dig in a little bit more, so it's a great way to really express some opinions, dig in on stories. And so I do that on Sirius XM, which is a satellite radio here in the States and in Canada, on a channel called MLB Network Radio, so it's 24 hours. It's also available online, which is pretty cool. And then on Saturdays during the baseball season –
during the season,
Yeah, only during the baseball season, I co-host a show on CBS Sports Radio Network, which is a lot of fun. It's a 2-hour show from 10 to noon Eastern time and a national show. It's on about 300 affiliates around the country. So an additional radio show that I do that I really enjoy. So a lot of radio, but the big gig going forward for me will be doing the Texas Rangers games starting here in 2017.
Yeah, you said at the beginning, you said next year, and I was going to remind you that you've already kicked over
this
into
year.
The new year. So yeah, you're doing it this year, but I'm glad to hear that. You have a great voice. I really have been following you as much as I can from Japan. I used to listen to your podcast as well and love that. So I always look forward to a chance to hear you. Now, we want to talk about the changes, reform, the significant changes and everything that was done to the CBA last year with MLB and the players. And Jim Allen, my partner, you know, said he went to the winter meetings and he talked to an MLB executive at that time. And the executive said he expected the CBA to encourage more top Japanese amateurs to sign with MLB teams rather than take a shortcut like Ohtani was supposed to do. So how much do you think that's a possibility?
Well, I don't know if that's going to work out necessarily or not. I mean, obviously, we know that's something that's frowned upon in Japan anyway, right? And the idea of leaving as an amateur and for going playing an MPB to pursue a career in the States, you know, my perspective is so changed because I played there. I think had I not played in Japan, I would probably look at this situation and say, you know, you got to give these guys rights. You got to give these guys opportunities. If they want to come to the States as amateurs, they should, you know, both MPB and MLB should probably make it really easy on that guy, right? As a free market guy here in the States, you would think I would probably have thought that's a no-brainer. That's the way it definitely should happen.
Right.
Now that I've been over there and understand the culture a little bit and understand how important it is to keep some of those players, I think, in the States to make sure that you're keeping the strength of MPB up, I kind of find myself caught in between a little bit, to be quite honest with you, where I understand why they may want to make it a little bit difficult. I don't like the harsh penalties necessarily and
certainly,
the idea of a guy, you know, having to miss or can't come back for a certain amount of time if he goes down that route. But there probably should be a little bit more of an agreeable situation now going forward, obviously.
Shinichi Tozawa is probably not going to be on the plane in PV for quite a while, even if he
does
exactly,
come back. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just signed a nice deal to go pitch with the Marlins this year. Anyway, so, you know, I don't think we're going to see it, and especially now because of at least not one of the big guys. It just doesn't make a lot of sense because of where we are with restrictions on spending with amateur free agents. I mean, it's got international free agents. It's gotten so top heavy now where you have to be so careful where it's going to be one or two guys if you're going to go big, and that's going to be it. There is no going over your allowance. And we saw that for a while. Whatever the limits were, there were certain teams that were comfortable. So, you know what? We're just going to blow past that this year. We're going to sign a bunch of guys and we'll pay the penalty. Well, it's not going to be that simple anymore. And so moving the age back a little bit and the way that the restrictions are lined up, we probably won't see any of the big amateurs because guys know they can do better in Japan. And I think at the end of the day, that's probably best for MPB. The idea of Major League Baseball taking all of their even or trying to get their hands on some of their best amateur talent is probably not ideal for Japan.
Well, yeah, it might be good for MPB, but who are all of these executives to decide what career path these athletes should be taking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think, listen, I like the idea, of course. I understand why Major League Baseball would want to make it as easy as possible and why they'd want to get their hands on the world's best talent. But you're right. It's not their decision. It shouldn't be, probably on both sides. I don't know if it should be Major League Baseball or MPB's right to put any kind of restrictions to make it so difficult. You know, and it's a tough spot to be in as an amateur, right? If you're, you know, an 18-year-old kid coming out of high school in Japan or a little bit older coming out of college or whatever it may be. And to be faced with that, it's okay. You know, let's just say I know I can sign for, you know, $1.5 million and go to the States or $1.5 and go to Japan. Or, you know, it's got to be pretty tough to put a kid in that position. I will say this. You know this, that you're going to have a better chance of being in the big leagues a lot quicker in Japan. And that's going to be a really good experience. And so for your overall development, that's probably ideal. I still think it's probably better for Japanese guys to sign with MPB teams as amateurs. I just think you're going to be in a better position where if you go to the States, you're going to have to go through the entire minor league system, and it could take a little bit longer, especially if you're talking about an 18-year-old kid. And then to go live in another country to do it in some of these minor league cities can be pretty difficult on players.
Right.
I know it happens. It happens in Korea, obviously, because a lot of Korean amateurs come over from the States, and that can be really tough on guys. So it's probably always best to sign anyway if you're pretty young to sign in Japan. Since Tosawa was such an interesting situation, though, right? Because teams passed on him a couple of times. That's exactly. A little bit different, I think, than maybe your highly touted amateurs right now in Japan.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, it's hard to imagine Ohtani being the intriguing player he has developed into being, this two-way guy, had he not had this career path that he's got, that he's on right now. So, you know, with the fighters and with the shortcut that they promised him, we probably won't see that again in terms of a high-profile player. I don't know how much of an offer. I heard there was an actual offer on the table from him for him from MLB teams, but shunning the MLB to stay here. But if the new CBA changes end up dissuading Japanese amateurs and teams from trying to replicate the Ohtani experience or experiment, what do you think the impact is?
Yeah, so you're talking about the idea of him not even, or any players even having the option. Right. You're talking about as amateurs where it's not even,
right. You have to be
not even on the table.
And the money,
I think it's great. I think it's
limited.
I think it's best for the league. I think without a doubt that's best for MPB in that situation because, like you mentioned, Ohtani is probably not in the position that he is in right now had he signed coming out of – you know, it was a high school that he came out of, right? So coming out of high school in Japan and then signing with the States – signing in the States with MLB. I don't think you would have seen nearly the guy because if a team made an investment in him – they would have picked one or the other, right? So he was probably going to be a pitcher, right? He was a stronger pitcher coming out of high school, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, so without a doubt, the teams, you know, even if we see guys that can hit a little bit, if you make an investment in a pitcher, he's only pitching. You know, hopefully you sign with the National League team, maybe get to hit once in a while, but they're not going to let you go through that development. And so we don't see the guy that we saw last year in the monster season that he had offensively with the power that makes him so intriguing. And he'll be in a great position, and they've pushed it back a little bit, but he'll be in a great position to cash in if and when Nippon Ham Fighters decide that they want to let him go. He's going to do well. He is going to be highly touted. What's going to be interesting to me is what teams are going to want to do. Even with the power, are there teams out there that are going to want him to hit? If an American League team picks him up, are they really going to let him, you know, DH once in a while? I can't imagine that they would. But you know, getting back to your original question, he is not in the position that he is in if he signed with an MLB team as an amateur.
Right. All right. Now, the same MLB source told Jim that, you know, Ohtani's name never came up in the discussions about the hard cap on international signing pools and all that stuff. It was exclusively aimed at the Cuban players. Now, how much do you think that's true?
I buy into that. I think it's a legitimate issue. You know, as they sit there and they try to get this thing figured out, teams, you know, sometimes have to be protected from themselves. And what I mean by that is they'll say things like, you know, we don't want to spend in this area. We have to be careful. You know, we have luxury tax threshold. We'll put these barriers in place on international signings, and teams still go over. They still can't control themselves, right? There's still situations where they say, okay, we'll set up draft pick compensation, and you're still going to get a team that's still going to go out and spend the money. And so I think in the sense of the Cuban players, we've seen some really bad contracts. We've seen some contracts go bad really fast, right? Hector Oliveira, I believe, was around $68 million. There's no return on that investment. That ends up being a huge waste in what has happened with his career. Ruzny Castillo is kind of in that same spot. I think he was the all-time highest at $80 plus million. We'll see where that's going to end up. It's not looking all that promising. So I think trying to put some safeguards in place, quite honestly, so that these teams can protect be protected from themselves makes a lot of sense. So I don't think this was aimed at Ohtani by any means. Listen, 26 for a kid of his stature and what he can still bring to the table, the difference between 25 and 26, sure, it's a year, but it is still monster, monster value for what he is doing. So I don't think he loses in this. I don't think a year younger is going to cost him any dollars if he comes over when he is 26. I think the contract's going to be just as big.
All right, that's interesting. I thought there were limits on the amount of money that they can pay him as a bonus, but I guess they can work out a contract.
Well, under 26.
Right.
So, but if he's over 26, they can do what they want, right? If the way I understood it was then they're not going to be nearly as penalized and he'll do really well.
Yeah, well, he'll be 23.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if they wait.
So you think he should not even go next year? You think he should wait?
No, no. So I guess I should have been clear about that. No, for me, if I'm him, as great as he is, I'm waiting until I'm free and clear, right? So that's 26 years old. I'm waiting until I meet that threshold and what matters most, because otherwise the money's not going to be nearly, I mean, significantly higher if he doesn't have to deal with that, those restrictions. And so, yeah, it stinks that it's going to be another year and it holds him back. But it's almost like, you know, almost like the Tanaka Darvish situation, right? I mean, the rules changed and the difference in contract from Masahiro Tanaka compared to Yu Darvish. Right? So for me, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I'm sure Darvish, part of Yu Darvish is like, oh, man.
Yeah,
that kind of stinks a little bit. But yeah, three times as much now, in his pocket.
Wait a minute now. What if the guy, like a guy like Ohtani, how much more can he learn in MPB and if he wants to go to the MLB and start that process? Because, of course, he's going to take some knocks when he gets over there.
Sure.
You know, what's he going to learn here that he can use over there? I'm, you know, what if he's ready to go and the financial reward isn't there and it's very it doesn't persuade him to go?
Yeah, it would be a tough one, and that's the difficult spot that he's in. Can he get much better? I mean, always get a little bit better, but is there going to be significant improvement going forward? Probably not. But it all depends. I mean, unless he's okay, unless he's so anxious to get started, and he's fine signing a significantly smaller deal, which is still going to be a great deal, you know, for the regular person. We say, okay, well, you know, it's a, you know, whatever, a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal for, you know, whatever, $15 million, whatever it's going to be. And saying, well, you know, if he's free and clear, he's looking at a 9-figure payday and over $100 million. That's on him. And what if, you know, if he's so anxious and he wants to do it, he certainly can. Or maybe they can get creative and a smart agent can figure it out where he can get paid quicker. But the idea of being a free agent, you know, under 27 years old, it's a 9-figure payday. I mean, and that's the difference. Now, if he's so anxious to come over, he certainly can, and as long as the fighters are okay with that and they allow that to happen, but he's not going to get nearly the financial reward.
All right. Well, I mean, obviously he's on the radar with the Babe Ruth production that he had this past season, but how much on the radar is he, in your opinion?
Oh, the name is out there. I think, you know, people know because of the two-way part of this, right? Not everybody, not all baseball fans pay that close attention to what's going on overseas or you know, anything outside of Major League Baseball. A lot of them don't pay attention to what's going on at the minor league level here and who's on their
growing,
way up.
It's growing.
It's getting
growing,
there.
It's growing.
Oh, without
growing.
A doubt.
Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely getting there.
But you're
because
right.
We've had so many great stars that have come over from Japan. And so people get it. But I'd say your casual fan probably doesn't dig in. But you know how it is now. I mean, there's such a strong online baseball community, people that are digging in when it comes to stats, when it comes to amateurs, even in college baseball, which is not that popular here. But there's people that know, there's a good group of people, strong group that know who's coming, you know, from the amateur side or from these other leagues. So without a doubt, the international coverage is great. Guys at Baseball America do a really good job in covering Cuba, and Jesse Sanchez does a really nice job for MLB.com. I think it's MLB.com. Yeah, MLB.com did a great job of covering a lot of that stuff. So I would say the fans that are in the know in the game, that dig in more beyond, oh, did my team win last night or how's my team doing this year? That next group of fans, without a doubt, they know. And they're excited about it because it's such a novelty. You know, we have a couple of pitchers here that can hit a little bit and guys over the years, but nothing like this. I mean, nothing to this degree where we're legitimately saying, is there the possibility that we have a dominant, huge, tall, power-throwing pitcher who can also drop legitimate bombs and play both ways? It's a fascinating story. We just don't see it. Guys don't get the opportunity.
And he hit .322 and more than 300 bats this past season, by the way, with the 22 home runs. So, I mean, among the teams, though, I mean, our team seriously, I'm sure a lot of them know about him, but are they really thinking about trying to acquire him?
Oh, I think without a doubt, and especially because nowadays it is so difficult to get your hands on the talent that you're looking for, because you saw this past winter, the free agent market was really weak, especially from a pitching side. And that's because guys are getting locked up earlier. There's so much money in the game now. We thought Steven Strasburg, as an example, was going to be able to hit the free agent market this year and be the number one guy. And what happens?
No way.
The Nationals made a strong enough offer and even did it
early. Yeah,
they did it early, but they also even did it with Scott Boras, which is very unusual. That's why a lot of us felt like, oh, for sure, this guy is going to hit the free agent market with Scott Boras. But instead, he gets a 7-year, $175 million contract. So point being, the free agent market continues to get weaker and weaker. And a lot of people talking about 2018, but so much can change between now and then and how strong that market may be. But it's difficult to get your hands on really good talent to that level. There's no doubt every single Major League Baseball team knows about Ohtani. They cover Asia so much stronger than they ever have, especially because of the success that these other guys have had, and especially because even worst case scenario, he's probably coming at 26 years old, and that's still a really strong place to be. So they're all on him. It's just a matter of certain teams knowing they have no chance. They're small market teams that if this is going to be a situation where you know, there is no restrictions on what you can pay him, there are certain teams that just are not going to be able to compete. Now, there's probably a lot of these teams that would love to see him come out earlier, where the restrictions would work into all 30 teams' favor, and then maybe they have a chance of selling him on their market.
All right, we'll get you out of here in a little while here. I don't want to keep you too long, but the World Baseball Classic, it doesn't seem to be popular in the United States. It doesn't seem to be popular among MLB teams and maybe MLB management. I don't know. Why do they give it the cold shoulder?
I will tell you this. I think that people love it. I think players love it.
Players love it and the Latin people love it, but I haven't seen that passion in the United States. And I'm so disappointed each time because I'm always rooting for – I mean, yeah, I tell people I live here in Japan. I've been here a long time, but I'm rooting for the USA, man. And they just – they're awful. And they don't seem to care.
I would say that they care. I would tell you that I think a lot of players are interested in playing in it, a lot of American players. But they run into a situation. I just saw Ray Sears, the pitching coach from the Pirates, come out and say that he prefer none of his guys play in the WBC. And it's listen, it's the best thing we have to offer in international baseball. It's better than the Olympics. But you know as well as I do in experiencing it over there that other countries look at it differently. And I think – I don't know if it's an American exceptionalism attitude where they feel like they're already the best, but we know that the best talent in baseball comes from so many different countries around the world. The other issue you have is just a huge investment in players. You know, and so to say the idea of Max Scherzer, David Price with their $200-plus million contracts, teams are not excited about the idea of these guys cranking it up in early March and going full throttle. I mean, both of those organizations expect their players to be making meaningful or pitching in meaningful games at the end of late October and maybe even to early November. And that's just something that these guys are not used to doing. Now, we know in Japan, using them as an example, and even in a lot of Latin countries because of winter ball, that these guys are playing intense baseball a lot longer for a longer period of time. But they get nervous about it, especially with injuries being so rampant right now amongst pitchers, that teams are just really cautious. And yes, it would be nice to play in it and win, but the risk versus reward is just not there for a lot of major league teams. Some are good about it, but some are not, and they just don't want to take those chances. Like, there's no chance Steven Strasburg is going to pitch because he missed time at the end of the year. There's no way that the Washington Nationals can justify that, especially with the big contract. So I think the idea of playing it is exciting. I think a lot of American players want to. I think it's more the organizations want to hold some of these guys back. And there are some players that don't like the idea of completely disrupting their preseason routine and going pretty hard and heavy from the beginning.
Once every 4 years. I've heard all that stuff before, and I understand it. I certainly understand it. But, what I'm hearing is the players are interested. The teams are not committed. So the players are not committed. But like I said, I want the USA to win. They don't field a competitive enough team, in my opinion, all the time. And the guys are playing hard. But here's the other thing, that if MLB is not behind this thing, how long can it last? How long can it exist the way it is? You know, I don't think Japan and the Asian countries can carry it way deep into the future.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I still love it. I look forward to it. I love watching it. I love seeing the other countries compete. I know this year Korea, who has been a pretty good competitor, but, you know, an early exit last time around, they're a lot weaker this year because of guys that are not going to be able to play, whether Jung Ho Kang because he's got some legal issues. And then I've already heard that Sin-Choo Chu with the Rangers and now maybe Hyun-Soo Kim with the Orioles may not be participating. I mean, Korea does not run nearly as deep as a lot of other countries when it comes to major league talent. And sounds like, you know, they're not going to be very strong this year. And so they may not be into it nearly as much unless they have some kind of miracle run in them like they did a few years ago. I'll say this the other thing, too. And I remember watching the WBC when Darvish was coming out and closing. Right? Remember Darvish closing in games in the WBC? That'll never happen here. Like, Max Scherzer's not going to close. Like, a team is not going to be like, here's our $200 million pitcher. There's not enough. It's not as much of a priority for them to win it where they're not only going to you know, use their big guys, but then use them out of their normal roles.
So, I
understand the pride factor in Japan and why it's such a big deal, but it doesn't exist here nearly as much.
So what's the future of this tournament? Is it going to, you know, is it going to not exist in another 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 years?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know where they are financially. I know there's been some back and forth, and we've seen some things where as far as how much of the share, you know, should be going to each organization and everything else. But as long as it's financially stable and it's sustainable and it's holding itself up, I don't see why they would ever stop. If it becomes a problem where, you know, other countries are complaining that the best are not playing, maybe that would do some damage. But I still think it's a good enough tournament. That'll continue to go. Unless it ever becomes a financial burden, I think it would be here to stay.
Okay. All right, man. We really appreciate it. I really enjoy talking to you every time, and I always enjoy listening to you on all the various platforms you are broadcasting on. So keep up the good work, and good luck with the Rangers and Darvish and Tony Barnett.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be great. I appreciate it, John. It's always good to catch up with you and talk baseball.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Thanks a lot.
All right, you too, John.
Thanks a lot, CJ. I'm glad I could talk to you. I mean, I see you all over the place at the winter meetings, but we never talk. So anyway, it's good to hear you.
Yeah, much appreciated. So so he's going to be the analyst for the Rangers, which is awesome. And he's going to get to do some play-by-play also. So I'm really looking forward to that. Although he said he doesn't have much experience in it, I think he's going to do great. And to see him do a Darvish game that maybe Tony Barnett gets to appear in, that would just be so cool for a lot of long-time MPB watchers and fans. Although it's going to be real muggy in Texas and everything, it's probably going to be if it's a long game for him, but that would really be fun for us to watch as MPB guys.
Yeah, I think so. He brings a lot of interesting insight as we heard. And I was listening to him and I didn't know quite what to expect, you know, talking about the new collective bargaining agreement between MLB and its union.
Right.
I really didn't know what side to get, because when I was in America, I was just overwhelmed by Major League attitude. They have Major League attitude issues.
Seen some people with some Major League attitudes, so yeah.
Yeah, well, and to sum it up, it's all about money. You never do anything for nothing. You never do anything if you can't make a profit if you have a choice. Everything's always, you know, to the highest bidder. And therefore, their presumptions about the way the rest of the world work are tinted by that Major League attitude, which is why they really can't understand the Shohei Ohtani situation.
Yeah, I don't think they're willing to understand. I think based on what we've heard and what we've read, it's especially on my side, but I'm speaking for you, but it just seems to me that people are not willing to think about. I mean, they say Babe Ruth, yeah, but that was, you know, that was 90 years ago, or, you know, that was in the before time. That was that was olden days of baseball. That doesn't happen anymore. You can't do that in the major leagues.
yes, as well as yeah, well, that's part of it. That's one thing. I mean, we're constantly living with that, and there is a reality to the major leagues, and one of the biggest realities is perhaps less than the quality issue, is the issue of, you know, playing 162 games and you know, finishing your night game at midnight, getting to the airport at 1 a.m., getting into the new town at 5 a.m., and being at the ballpark at 2 in the afternoon.
The next day, exactly.
And that's part of the reality of the major leagues that is probably harsher than any, or I would say, yes, harsher than any level in talent between the best players in Japan and your above average major league regular.
And I think that Norichika Aoki said the same thing. He said, hey, you know, I can play baseball anytime. It's a travel, you know, it's moving around this big country that, you know, will wear you out and doing just what you said, going to the ballpark without enough sleep when your body hasn't recovered from the previous game and playing a major league game at a high level. It's very taxing.
It is. And that's, you know, and that's a reality that, you really have to, it's hard to account for, but you have to be aware of. But essentially two of the things I was thinking about when I listened to CJ is that one, he does get it, that Japan has something to add to the whole world baseball phenomenon.
Right.
In the sense that, and I did write it, well, I wrote an essay about this that hasn't gone anywhere. I guess I should put on my webpage. But, which is essentially that baseball thrives on evolution. Everything thrives on evolution, on learning new things.
Mm-hmm.
And what you get is if everybody does things the major league way, what you get is less interesting baseball.
Exactly. I'm with you there.
And major league teams look at it. And when I spoke to the major league executive at the winter meetings, who was somebody who was actually negotiating the collective bargaining agreement, he said, yeah, I think this will lead Japanese players to say, well, if I have to be a free agent, I have to be in Japanese baseball until I'm, you know, after I'm 25. And if I'm ready at 22 and I want to be in the major leagues when I'm 22, it behooves me to go earlier.
Exactly.
And I think major league teams are going, wow, 7 years of control for a, you know, for pocket change compared to, you know, how many millions of dollars down the road is really a sweet deal. And the major league teams are all going, wow, this is great for us. But it isn't. It isn't, because they'll end up getting players and putting them into they'll basically end up with more players who are just like the players they've got, as opposed to guys, somebody
exactly.
Like
I love
Ohtani, who's a unique package.
Yeah, I love what you said about a less interesting product, because in the talk, and I said it to CJ, I said, look, well, doesn't that mean that a guy who's ready to go and feels like he can make the jump, but he knows he's going to have to spend a little bit of time learning, why shouldn't, you know, he should do that at an earlier age, not a later age. And so this way, the major leagues actually are saving jobs. They're making baseball great again, so to speak, because they're going to have more jobs for Americans.
Right. Well, I think it is actually going to encourage Japanese amateurs to go straight to major league teams.
Mm.
And I think the problem with that is there's two things. One is, you know, I think there's an ideal. Everybody is ready for MLB at a different age. But one of the things that MLB can do for an 18-year-old is, if you're 18 years old, you're an 18-year-old, and I'll say this, if you're an 18-year-old American and you went to play in NPB and you were able to compete in NPB, you would learn quite a bit more than you're learning in the minors in the U.S. And the reason for that is because NPB might not be MLB in terms of its competitive level.
Right.
But it's better than, you're going to be facing pitchers who are some of the best pitchers in the world. You know, you're going to be competing against some of the best pitchers in the world.
You're saying if you're on the first team of an NPB?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, there's no guarantee you're going to be on the first team.
No, there is not. But I'm saying, but if you're really good when you're 18, NPB is a much better environment than the U.S. minors.
Well, yeah, I think Shohei Ohtani and some other guys who started their careers out of high school in NPB are showing us that can be the case.
Okay, the problem is, you know, once and you brought this up, how much better is somebody like Shohei Ohtani going to be? I think, you know, in a year we're going to see pretty much all we're going to be able to see out of him in Japan.
Which was my sentiments exactly. Which is, you know, wait. You're telling him to wait and spend toil here for 3 years until he becomes 26 so he can get a decent paycheck that other guys could get if they were already in the major leagues?
Yes.
That's not fair.
And this goes back to the thing of what's best for the major league, having the best player.
Right. Or?
Or preserving the system.
Right.
So anyway, so he certainly got that, and I was happy to hear that. And it's very rare for an American to think anything outside of MLB is better.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, his thinking was, as I said, was much in line with everybody else I spoke to at the winter meetings, in that the unnamed MLB executive said, you can't be serious to think Nippon Ham will actually post him for $20 million, because it doesn't make sense. to us. And I have to add that to us. It doesn't make sense to anybody in the United States. Okay.
Just because of the 20 million is too low a figure.
Chicken feed. Yeah. Sure, it's chicken feed. No major league team would do it. Although I do remember when Rakuten posted Tanaka, there were people posting all over, you know, comments all over American website stories about, well, why are they complaining about $20 million? They're lucky they get anything. Why don't they just give their talent to us like they're supposed to?
Right. I remember you making that comment.
You know, it's like, what are they complaining about? They shouldn't get anything but a kick in the teeth. They're not MLB. They should be bowing down and grateful that we're even talking about them. So the other thing is that the other respect that he was very much in line with the majority of people I spoke to at the winter meetings was there is little chance a major league team would let a pitcher bat if he was only marginally better as a pitcher. Once they decide this is where your future is, forget the other one. So that in that sense, he was pretty much towing the line. And it's, of course, that's in sharp contrast to the Trey Hillman one, which was, yeah, let's see what he can do.
Well, I mean, let's go through this now. Let's go back. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, it was before Masahiro Tanaka went to the Yankees that they changed the posting system, and we were expecting some change to something, and we came up with this CBA that just has all these rules about international players now. And I saw some back and forth between you and some of your tweets on Twitter, and yeah, obviously this whole thing is built to, you know, I likened it to when I sat down and looked at the rules. I mean, you remember the Japanese proficiency test? Did you ever take that thing?
Yep.
That test, yeah, you know, it's basically set up to trick all the Chinese speakers, because all the Chinese speakers, you know, kanji comes from China, and they can all read the kanji characters, so it's not a problem for them. So what the test makers spend time doing is trying to trick the Chinese by using vague wording and sleight of hand.
I think vagary is illegal in these precincts, dude, so you better watch out for that.
But anyway, the Westerners and European people get they end up suffering because of it, and it's not an exam that actually tests your Japanese ability. It tests your ability to pay attention to tiny insignificant details, and it's you know, it's avoiding one trap after another. So I looked at what the CBA is doing, and like you said, it is basically out to, you know, limit ways that Latin players can make a jump and take over a lot of American jobs. Sure. But in the meantime, you got MPB and KBO guys suffering because of it. Because, you know, let's face it, there aren't as many Asian players going over to the States and making impact on major league rosters. And I think these...
No, not at the age of 23, there aren't.
Certainly
no.
Not, yeah. And I think NPB teams are looking at the returns on some of the guys. You know, I think Matsuzaka had the one good season, but he was never certainly worth it. Seemingly the returns they got on all the money that they spent there.
Well, he had two good seasons. He had one good season and one outstanding season.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
But, you know, you look at Kenta Maeda, I think the Dodgers might have expected a little bit more from him in terms of not being a five and dive guy, but maybe being a guy who could, you know, sustain and be out there a little bit longer in games. But I mean, he won a bunch of games, so you can't complain about that. But anyway, I'm just thinking that these, you know, there are more Latin players impacting these rosters than there are Asian players. And so these Asian players are going to have to suffer while they make rules that impact or that are directly looking to curb the number of Latin players that are coming in and taking, you know, lots of this international money. And
they're not trying to curb the inflow of Latin players. They're trying to curb the outflow of cash by setting house rules.
Well,
and
I think it's a little of both, don't you think? I mean, I'm sure it's about money, but in the end, it's going to be saving jobs for American players. I mean,
well,
that's going to be one of the residual
only
results.
Well, perhaps, you know, if if it keeps a Cuban, an 18-year-old Cuban professional from saying, well, let's see, under the new, under the new, well, let's take an 18-year-old out of the picture. Let's say it's a 23-year-old because now we're somebody who was formerly eligible to be a professional, and saying, look, I'm making $18 a month in Cuba, and I have a choice. Maybe I should wait 2 years so that I can make $60 million instead of 10. Let's see, $20, 10 million. Let's do the math on that. So I don't see that. I really don't see that happening.
But I
But
mean, yeah, but what you're going to get some tweeners. You're going to get some guys who are 23, 24 who say, you know what? I'll stay here. I'll play. I'll be a
one
star a
year.
couple more years so that I can sign that one big contract. And then I won't have to worry about how many donuts and, dollars I'm getting per hour. So, I mean, I think it's going to.
Yeah, there it will impact a few people,
Yeah,
but
I
I
don't think
don't
it's
think a
all of them.
large number. And it's basically only Cubans because it's the only professional league where people, let's put it this way, the Cuban teams ain't posting those players. The posting system in Cuba is find someone to smuggle you out of the country.
Right.
Right, in the middle of the night, with armed guards and all kinds of money under the table. This is not Nippon Ham, to saying, well, we'll suck it up and we'll do it for $20 million. These are people who are not as bad as it was a few years ago, but basically they're putting their lives on the line.
Right.
And they may think, well, yeah, if I'm 24, it's a difference. If I'm 23, they may think, I might get 6 million instead of $20 a month.
And I get it. I get what CJ's saying about having the team saving the teams from themselves was the comment
Yep,
that he made.
absolutely.
And I thought, well,
Absolutely.
that's, if you don't, if you can't scout or if you are throwing millions of dollars at a player who turns out to be less than star quality, that's your fault.
True.
Why does the doctor have to step in and say, hey, don't be an addict,
Yeah.
if you want to
Yeah,
kill yourself, kill yourself.
I hear
And move
you.
on to the
And
next team.
no, I hear you, and I understand that. And the other side of the equation is, look, and I had people lecture me on this. Look, if you're an American, he didn't come out and say we exploit these American amateurs. We prevent them from earning market value until they're 26. He didn't say it that way. So we should exploit foreigners until they're 26. But that's essentially the way it is. The Americans say it's unfair that overseas professionals are not exploited in the same way we are. And
Hey,
that's a so there's
let us
a
in.
yeah, let's get those guys in the club, let's all be
We
exploited.
want to be in the exploitation club. Well,
Exactly.
I'm looking at a guy like Tetsuto Yamada who, we talked about it last year. This is a guy who's ready. He's a terrific talent. Obviously, he's not an Ohtani, so we don't have to worry about him trying to bat and pitch, but there's no financial incentive for him to go over after this season, but he's really, you talked about the fact that he's in his prime as a talent, and he's likely at the height of his earning power. So if he were to wait and go over, yeah, he's going to make more money, but is he going to really be as valuable as he would be if he were able to go under the previous rules after this 2017 season? I don't think so.
Well, and I think that's certainly true, and I think that it's not better. This rule actually hurts a very tiny subset of Japanese players. I mean, right now I see it hurting Ohtani. Well, but he's going to go anyway, apparently. And it hurts somebody like Tetsuto Yamada, who could have gone, he could have gone last year, but the rules really weren't suitable for him to go last year. And now the rules have changed again. And so, he'll probably wait. He's going to wait until the end of this season. But the other thing is that, the number of players that, as I said, it's only a tiny subset, but Japanese baseball is getting better, and it's getting better faster than MLB is getting better.
You know, I could see that, but I mean, when you're so close to the top, it's harder to get better. It's just like when you're trying to lose weight, right? That those last 2 pounds before
absolutely.
You get to your goal weight are
absolutely.
So
but
I think that makes sense. Yeah.
No, I think it is. It is, and I think one of the things I think that number of players is going to increase. The number of players who are going to be coming out of high school who are really good isn't going to decrease. It's
right.
going to increase. There's going to be more and more kids in NPB who are going to be major league ready at the age of 22 and 23, you know, in 10 years than there are now. Now it might be 3 or 4. In 10 years, it might be 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. So these are players who would benefit from the Ohtani shortcut that, you know, under the current system will not be available to them. And NPB will say, well, you know, we'd like to give you a deal and keep you in NPB. And they're going, haha, you what, till I'm 29? No, thank you. I'm gone.
Right.
So and then they'll get players who lacked that competition, you know, as 18-year-olds in NPB against some of the best pitchers in the world with some of the best control in the world. And they're going to go to, you know, and become sort of Japanese MLB clones. And so I think, as I said, in the long term, it's going to hurt MLB. It's going to hurt NPB.
Yeah, and CJ talked about the fact that keeping some of the high-end talent in Japan is good for NPB. And
well, sure it is.
It is in a sense because the fans are familiar with these guys. They've mm-hmm. come to become big fans of theirs because of their production. But I still I didn't believe what Michael Westbay said way back in the day when we began this podcast. But you know, he said the inflow of talent when one talent leaves, it gives an opportunity to new talent, and there's always going to be new players cropping up and guys who work hard. So I don't think MLB has to worry about that. It's not their problem, you know.
You mean NPB?
No, MLB doesn't have to worry about NPB keeping its talent level high.
No, well, I don't think. First of all, they couldn't care less. But I think it is important to MLB that NPB be a quality league for those purposes stated that, you know, it's going to mean better baseball in MLB. Better baseball in NPB is going to mean better baseball in MLB because it will be that extra dimension where, you know, a league where people do things a little differently. And I think that's the best thing. Now, the other thing, and I guess we need to talk about nuts and bolts about the CBA very briefly.
Okay.
Now, what the CBA is going to mean for Shohei Ohtani is, as you were mentioning and as CJ mentioned, had the old CBA been in force this upcoming offseason, Shohei Ohtani in the U.S. media would have been looking at a contract in the area, according to the U.S. media, of between $200 to $300 million. And now...
Take that, Masahiro Tanaka, and you, Darvish.
Yeah, Zach Greinke, you know, sorry, dude. You know, you gotta
be throwing an MLB pitch. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I know. I just wait for the whining and complaining. I mean, I remember whining and complaining when Ichiro signed, when they paid, $13 million to negotiate with Ichiro Suzuki, the major league players jumped out of their skins. So, okay, well, anyway, moving past that, now with the new CBA, which has a hard cap, teams can no longer shoot way over it and offer $80 million contracts and take a punishment down the road. They're basically, the teams are limited to an allotment for their international signing bonuses of between $4.75 million and $5.75 million. And those limits can be augmented through trade. So a team that isn't going to use all of theirs, such as the 10 teams who are prohibited from spending more than $300,000, can trade their allotment amount to other teams, but it can only be increased by up to 75%. And now 175% of $5.75 million is a little over $10 million.
Still ain't much.
Well, yeah, For me, it's a lot.
Hey,
Yeah.
give it to me. I'm not saying I wouldn't take it.
Exactly. For me, it's a lot. For more, us normal people, it's not, it's a huge amount. But for somebody, when you go from $200 to $300 million to 10, and it also means that whoever goes will be treat every player under every professional, every player under the age of 25 will be treated as an amateur, which means they can only sign a minor league contract. A 7-year minor league contract. It's automatic. The salary is fixed. Now, the day they enter the major leagues, they will be on a major league contract, and the minimum salary of a major league contract is around $500,000.
Yeah.
So, basically, until he's arbitration ready, Shohei Ohtani would be looking at 3 years before arbitration if he's in the major leagues from day one,
mm-hmm.
3 years of around $11.5 million, a little more than $11.5 million or a little less than $12 million. And then arbitration would bump that up. And somebody said, well, wait a minute. Evan Longoria did a deal. That's right. He did a deal where he got a long-term major league contract in the weeks after he signed his, he was brought up to the majors. He had been the Rays got a lot of flack for this, about they were circumventing the system, but the system, it was a very reasonable contract. It basically paid him not much over the major league minimum until he was arbitration ready. And then once he was arbitration ready, it bumped up to, I don't know what, $3 or $4 or $5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then it included the time into when he would have been a free agent eligible. Basically, he was throwing away several years of free agent eligibility, to sign for $12 or $13 million 7 or 8 years down the road. And it turned out to be a huge bargain for the Tampa Bay Rays.
Well, I remember people saying at the time that that was a great move by the Rays to lock up a guy like Longoria, because they were going to pay him what he was going to be under market by the time mm-hmm. that contract got halfway through, which is, I think they were right. But
So that could happen with Ohtani, and I think everybody would just say, well, that's fair.
Well, I wanted to, comment on the Ohtani thing, thinking that, okay, 3 years for 11 mil, maybe 12 mil, if some team mm-hmm. can augment that pool money. But wouldn't you say if he were to go over, let's say, after the 2017 season, so after this year, that, like I told CJ, he's going to take his knocks. Maybe he might be right at value, but mm-hmm. he's going to get better.
Absolutely. See, that's the huge thing. And this is the one that the MLB people completely miss, because it's all about money. It's all about cash.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to be the fastest pitcher in the world. He wants to be the best hitter in the world.
And he's got the potential.
And he has, there's a chance he could do it.
Yeah.
So, but if he went, if he goes and the other, if he goes and if he were in the major league system, no way that would happen. But I think, and to be the best hitter in the world, and even to be the best pitcher, he should be facing better competition than he is in Japan. And I think your point was so spot on. I couldn't have said that better myself. And the MLB people, and then when I listened to his answer, like, you mean, it's important. Things other than money are important. I mean, he didn't put it that way because he knows it's true, but nobody in MLB thinks that way.
Right.
Everything is about money. So it was very, that whole exchange was perfect.
Okay. All right, well, neither you nor I like this new CBA agreement and what it's going to do to the international player, in particular the Asian guys, but hopefully...
But.
Oh, that's right. This deal runs through 2020, was it?
Yeah.
Or maybe
which is the year? No, I think it's 2022.
Yeah, well, it's really long, so I don't.
Well,
even
it's
know.
Well, it's yeah, it's the point, and of course the year when Shohei Ohtani would be able to go to the majors as a full free agent is 2020.
Yeah, great. I just remember the CBA news for the NBA and MLB came over on the same day, and I was working on the
Oh.
desk and had to get both of those stories in, and I'm like, gosh, how am I going to make these headlines sound different?
Well, okay.
Yeah,
Yeah,
well,
interesting.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the WBC. The Samurai Japan team is going to be obviously forming and getting ready for the March tournament. It's going to slow things down in terms of the start of the MPB season only slightly,
Yeah.
but we all know that the Japanese teams get ready. Start getting ready for their season on February 1st, and that won't change.
No.
And I believe the Korean teams are already getting ready.
Yeah, they're about, yeah, they're, I think their spring training starts about the 15th of December. No, it's the, actually, Trey said it was, what did he say, the 28th, the 27th or something in Vero Beach. The SK Wyverns are going to go to Florida at the
Great.
end of
Yeah,
January.
wow. So, and we know that, like I was talking to CJ about in our chat, it seems like the Asian teams and the Latin teams take this tournament a lot more seriously than the US does. So that's that. But I think what's really has the Japan team perplexed is they had these warm-up games in November. And of course, at the time, I was spending most of my time at work and at the hospital getting ready for the expanding family and all those
How
things.
can you, how dare you put baseball on the back burner, man?
I taped the games. I watched them. I just don't
Okay. That's
remember.
good, good. Well done. Well done.
But I just remember seeing a lot of runners on base against Japan and a lot of guys stepping on home plate without a bat, meaning that they were driven in. And they played Mexico and the Netherlands, and they played four games. And the pitchers, I'm sorry, pitching gave up 29 runs over the four games. And like I said, I just, I would, I just kept seeing guys, running on home plate and stepping on it and jogging back to the dugout. And I'm like, wait a second, is this Samurai Japan? And I read a story this week about how Japan skipper Hiroki Kokubo, he's real focused on having Ohtani as a pitcher. He's going to try to figure out a way to use him at the plate, but he looked at his pitching staff and he said, there's only three guys I can say who are probably going to be on the team as starting pitchers right now. And that's Ohtani, Takahiro Norimoto of the Eagles, and Tomoyuki Sugano of the Giants. And the other guys he doesn't even know about. And he also said that he might not even have a left-handed starter among the guys in the rotation or the guys who are set to be started. Now, the way that, with the pitch counts and everything, the story I read said that basically they want to have two starters, each go four innings, in theory, ideally, and then have somebody come out of the bullpen and shut the game down. That's how they want to play it. But that means that they need eight starting pitchers to go through four games.
Well, they basically are going to have, yeah, there's a possible fourth game in each round. That
Yikes.
right. They have a playoff. So if basically there's a three-way, if there's a three-way tie for first or last, they'll have one team eliminated by a tiebreaker, and then the two teams in the middle, oh, either eliminated by a tiebreaker or elevated by a tiebreaker. For example, if three teams are two and one, and the other team's 0 and three, a tiebreaker will select the winner, and then the second and third teams will play off for the final spot.
Right. Okay.
Or if three teams are one and two, then the worst one team will be knocked out in a tiebreaker, and then the second and third place teams will play off for the final spot. Okay, so they could need up to eight starting pitchers. And Kokubo said that, and of course everybody said a lot's going to depend on the MLB pitchers coming. Now, I don't see it happening, but we did have a new rule, which they had talked about in Japan since really the end of November, but it wasn't not made official until 2 days ago, which is each team in the WBC is going to have a 10 a designated pitching pool of 10 pitchers.
Okay.
And after each round, they can take two of those pitchers. They can take two pitchers from their roster and replace them with two pitchers from the designated pitching pool.
I see.
So, it's very, and the reason they did this, surprise, surprise. Well, I mean, this is a good rule. This is not a good rule, you know, if you're South Korea or you're the Netherlands, and it doesn't matter how many designated pitchers you have, ain't none of them going to be on major league roster.
I was going to say, yeah.
So you've got the, you know, you're better off limiting everybody to five pitchers.
Right.
Because
hey, you can't use everybody over there.
That's right. But for teams like Japan and USA, Samurai Japan and USA, it's wonderful because it means the teams that were saying, well, we don't want to let you have Masahiro Tanaka for, you know, on the 20th of February can say, yeah, but you can have him on March 10th.
Right. Okay.
Right. So that means there's a possibility that, you know, when it gets down to brass tacks, Japan could be going into the finals with a pitching rotation that's essentially probably not Yu Darvish, although he can still appeal.
Mm-hmm.
He can appeal the Rangers' decision. I don't see him doing it.
I don't see it either.
Although,
as much as he's been injured, I don't see that. You know, they're going to say, really, really, really? You know, get out of here with this.
Right. And it being his walk year. So I don't see that happening. But, you know, they could have a pitching, you know, four guys. It could be Masahiro Tanaka, Kenta Maeda, Iwakuma, and Otani.
Oh, Otani. You know, there was something interesting I saw this week. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
That the pitching coach, Hiroshi Gondo, mm-hmm. was saying, you know, he's going to be like our ace. I think we're going to count on him to be the top starter.
Right.
And then the hitting coach, Atsunori Inaba, was saying, yeah, you know, I'm trying to lobby for his services. I'm trying to see if I can get Kokobo to, you know, let me use him as a hitter as much as possible, blah, blah, blah. So you go, imagine Otani in the middle, the pitching coach on one side, the hitting coach on the other side, and they're tugging, trying to get them on the other side.
Well,
and there's Kokobo trying to step in and say, no, he's mine. You both keep your hands off of him.
Yeah, well, I think, he's definitely a plus. He's a plus to that lineup, whether he only pitches or whether he only hits.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he's a huge asset. So I think, but with the pitching, you know, with the pitch limits, I think, yeah, one game is a starter and one game is a DH. You know, he obviously isn't going to hit. Because of the pitching limits, he isn't going to hit in the game in which he starts, because then that would mean taking him out of the game in the third or fourth inning.
Yeah,
but I could see him, batting in the other games, especially if Japan were to have a day off after the first game.
Right. So I mean, we'll talk about it more as the practices become more frequent and everything, the buildup starts to really get going for this tournament. But I saw another story also in our paper about the Japan Olympic Organizing Committee meeting mm-hmm. with sports bodies and officials, including the NPB commissioner, mm-hmm. recently to discuss ways to develop all sports and teams ahead of the Tokyo Games mm-hmm. in 2020. So, and I, you know, they talked about the WBC and the warm-up and the Premier 12. I think the Premier 12 is going to serve as qualifiers for the Olympics,
yep.
and all that stuff. So I mean, they're all working together to you know, they really take, the whole country takes this whole thing seriously, whereas in the States it's like, huh, WB, isn't that a boxing federation?
Indeed. Well, I mean it is the point. I think when I like to refer to Samurai Japan as NPB's national team.
I like that.
And Team USA is MLB's national team. There's no use, and it's always that it's for the Olympics too. I mean, if they wanted to win, there are players they would put on the team. You know, they would put there, but it's never about wanting to win. It's all about what's best for MLB teams going forward, rather than winning a medal for USA. And sorry for USA fans, but that's the truth.
Well, yeah, and I said to CJ, the guys who come there are playing hard and they really want to win.
Mm.
And it's not about lack of effort, or lack of preparation. It's just that, you know, just like you said, it's not Max Scherzer, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was the Davey Johnson quote after the U.S. lost to Japan in the semifinal the last time it was played at Dodger Stadium, when somebody said, why was that guy still on the mound when he was getting hammered? I thought he needed the work, and my duty was to make him ready for the season.
Yeah.
So
thank you
there.
For playing. We have some lovely parting gifts for you.
Exactly. The home version. You get the home version of MLB Jeopardy. So, okay. So now the other WBC news was that Brandon Laird has agreed to play for Team Mexico.
Oh, that went through. Okay.
Right. The fighters have not given their permission yet officially, but I think it, or at least they haven't announced they've given permission. But it's very hard for NPB teams to stop guys from playing the WBC when basically they make every player available.
What are they going to say to him? Well, no, you can't. That's right. Play. You can't go against him. He's your teammate.
Indeed. And Rick Van den Herk will pitch for the Kingdom of the Netherlands, which is going to be cool. And he'll be in the Asian bracket along with Israel and in South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a very interesting bracket over here with Van den Herk playing.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to this year, and I'm going to go through the rosters. And remember, I got it right last time, so I'm going to go through the rosters and make my prediction. And that's the last thing I got right. I think I've been wrong ever since then. So
you picked the Dominican Republic?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yes, I did.
Wow, well done.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well, we still haven't heard about the Japanese players who are going to play, other than Norichika Aoki and Koji Uehara isn't going to play because the Cubs leaned on him not to.
Right. And he wanted to play, which I think I tweeted. That reminds me of the old mound kick that he did at Jingu Stadium when he was walking Roberto Pettigini.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've got to make a two-seam transition and talk about the Hall of Fame very quickly.
The voting
announcement is coming up
soon.
In fact, before our next show, whenever that's going to be, but I would imagine 2 weeks from now. Mm-hmm. But you have a list of guys who you think are going to go in. And before you say this, I just want to rant really quickly and say,
You're on. Go for it.
I'm soured on anything that involves voting and NPB. You know, I can think about a bunch of players, Randy Bass, Tuffy Rhodes, Greg Boomer Wells, and a few other foreign guys who are really worthy of being in the Hall of Fame and are not in. And there's just no good reason for them to be shut out of this thing. I'm just kind of tired of the whole, let's put this guy in, let's not put this guy in. It's just, you know, the MVP voting. I'm done. So whatever. Go ahead. Maybe the Russians can hack into the balloting somehow and get these guys in, you think?
Hashtag high heat.
Wow, two low blows in one day. Okay. The baseball show, man, lighten up. Okay, now I'll just say, as much as I love Randy Bass and Boomer Wells, their careers in Japan were, although, I mean, Boomer's was long for a foreigner. It really wasn't that long, period.
Okay, whatever.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, and Randy's was very impact on.
Well, Randy Bass certainly did, and I think more so because it was in the Central League. But
well,
I think Boomer
sure.
was.
Tuffy
well, Tuffy,
sure.
Tuffy is definitely Hall of Fame worthy. There to me, there's no mistaking that Tuffy Rhodes is a quality Hall of Famer in Japan. I mean, players who have done anything like what he did in his career in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the Hall of Fame, or, you know, it's like America. They're either in the Hall of Fame, they're not yet eligible to be in the Hall of Fame, like Tomoaki Kanemoto, or they're out of the Hall of Fame because the people who vote don't like them.
Okay, well, don't worry about
they're banned.
Yeah, go on with your list and what you had to say. Don't worry about me.
Okay, now, a couple of years ago, it was pretty easy to guess who was going to get in. For the last 2 years, it's been easy to guess who was going to go in because you had people knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had guys, you know, huge candidates coming in the first year. Okay, but this year, it's kind of, you know, they've swept out, they've elected or people have run out of time, all the people who are close to getting in the Hall of Fame. So the closest people we have from last year were about 51% of the votes, and they need 75%. And that's a pretty big jump. Now, the leading vote-getter who didn't get in last time was Lotte Marine's manager, Tsutomu Ito, for his time, you know, as the catcher of the Cebu Lions.
Right.
And Kazuyoshi Tatsunami was just probably about one vote behind him. So okay, yeah. at 50.7%. So those guys have a good chance of picking up a huge amount of votes this year. Now, the next two guys on the list are interesting and certainly Hall of Fame worthy. Yoshinori Sato, who's currently the pitching coach of the SoftBank Hawks. And when this guy quits being a coach for 6 months and he's eligible to go back on the ballot in the experts division, he's probably going to go in really quickly because of his career as a pitching coach. And then Tuffy Rhodes had 28, Sato had 30.6% he was on 30.6% of the ballots. Tuffy Rhodes was on 28.5% of the ballots. They're really overqualified, and as is Kazuhiro Kiyohara, who with his drug conviction probably isn't going to make ground on the 22.6. Well, he was doing poorly before the drug conviction because a lot of reporters can't stand him.
Yeah, he was a foggy choice. Now he's just in a fog.
I know, but he's undoubtedly the most qualified player who's not now in the Hall of Fame who's eligible to go in. Now the best new candidates this year are Hiroshi Shibahara. Mm-hmm. Do I hear snoring? And Takahiro Saeki, who I really like personally, no competition.
Thought he was Hall worthy, but I like
him. I don't think either of those guys are going to get the 2% they need to stay on the ballot next year.
Okay.
Now in the experts category, we have a guy who was we might see Masaji Hiromatsu, former pitcher, go in. We might see Senichi Hoshino,
my man,
who is in the ballot for the third year. In the experts category, last year you needed 83 votes in the experts category, and Hiromatsu got 70, Hoshino got 69. One of those guys might jump up, one might not. Now, the other thing interesting about the experts category is that Tatsunori Hara will now be in as a former manager.
Mm-hmm.
So he, I believe, holds the record for the highest percentage of votes to never be elected. He missed selection to the Hall of Fame 2 years ago by, I think, 2 votes. And that was his last year of eligibility as a player. But now that he's no longer managing and you no longer have to wait 5 years after you're out of uniform, it's 6 months. He should get a decent showing because now they'll consider his managing record, which is among the best in NPB history.
Okay.
So I expect him to be up there and elected in a couple of years.
All right. So that's your Hall of Fame wrap up. We'll have it for the next show, who got in and who didn't. And like I said, it'll probably be 2 weeks from now that we, put another show out there, and then camp opens, so you're ready to get back into the groove.
Camp, here. I know.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone. Send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Send us comments about your picks for the WBC, your picks for the Hall of Fame, your comments on the CBA, anything. Let us know, and have a good year. We will talk to you in a couple weeks. Enjoy your off season.
Well, thanks for listening to our first show of the year, and happy listening for 2017.